My commentary on the Book of Ruth. Introduction. The Book of Ruth follows the Book of Judges in our English Bible. The reason why it follows the Book of Judges is because the time period, the events that took place within the Book of Ruth took place within the time period of the Judges. We will see that in verse 1 of chapter 1. Concerning the date when the Book of Ruth was written, we don't know for sure when Ruth was written. We do know that it had to have been written sometime during King David's rule or after, because there is a genealogy in the last few verses of the Book of Judges, and it's the genealogy of King David. So it only makes sense if David was not yet born, we could not have this genealogy. So it had to have been after the birth of David and after the time in which he became important to Israel, and that means when he was king. He first became king, first of all in Judah, in 1010 BC. He became king of all of Israel in 1003 BC. So any time beyond that point is when the Book of Ruth was written. Who wrote the Book of Ruth? We have no clue. There's been all sorts of people giving suggestions, but we just don't know. Who is Ruth? Or who was Ruth? Ruth was a Moabite. She was a pagan, polytheistic woman, and she plays a real role in Israel, as we will see from this book. Now, it's interesting to note, in the genealogy of the Lord Jesus Christ in Matthew 1, we will see Ruth's name mentioned, and that she was the husband of a man named Boaz, which is another character in the story of Ruth here. Boaz, his father was Salmon. His mother was Rahab. And most all Christian, conservative, evangelical Bible scholars believe this Rahab is the Rahab, the prostitute, innkeeper that we see in the days of Joshua. Remember when just after Joshua entered the land of Canaan, he entered into battle with the city of Jericho, and it was Rahab the prostitute that helped Joshua and the Israelis defeat those men in Jericho. And for that, she was greatly blessed because of the Abrahamic covenant that says, anyone who blesses Israel will be blessed. Anyone who curses Israel will be cursed. She was greatly blessed. She was protected from the onslaught of Israel when they captured and almost demolished Jericho. She ends up marrying Boaz's father, Salmon. Now, there are some people who believe that this can't be Rahab the prostitute, because how can Jesus have a prostitute in his lineage? Well, it's simple. The reason why God came to earth in the form of the Lord Jesus Christ, he came to earth into sinful humanity in order to rescue sinful humanity from sinful humanity. It's pure common sense that Jesus would not come to earth in some kind of superhuman righteous situation. He came to earth, born in a little town of Bethlehem, grew up in a very rough Nazareth. He grew into a family lineage that had all sorts of problems in the past, including prostitutes and other such sinful people. There's a couple laws we need to understand before we get into the Book of Ruth, the laws from the Law of Moses. One is the law of the levirate marriage. And you spell levirate, L-E-V-I-R-A-T-E. The word is not ever found in the Bible. It's a theological word that the theologians a number of centuries ago coined, and it's actually coined from a Latin word, to represent the law that we see in Deuteronomy 25, verses 5-10. This law was to support women who lost their husband, widows. If a wife's husband dies, the law provided that that wife would go to the brother of the dead husband, and he would marry her. If he refused, then she would go to the next brother. This provided for the family line of the deceased original husband to be carried on. So if the widow marries the brother of the deceased husband, the first son that is born is not his son. He is seen to be the son of the deceased husband. And in that sense, the family line carries on. You will remember that the Pharisees tempted Jesus with a question. They came to him one day and said, "Listen, Jesus, what if a widow marries the brother of the deceased husband, and that man, that brother, dies, and she marries the next brother, he dies, she marries the next brother, and he dies, and in the end, she has actually married seven brothers, and they all died. Whose wife will she be in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus says, "You got it all wrong. You don't give in marriage. There is no such thing as marriage in the kingdom of heaven. She is no one's wife." Well, the Pharisees got their question from this law found in the Law of Moses. Now, there is another, not a law, but a tradition that probably grew out of the levirate marriage. See, with any system of laws, there are always some people who fall through the cracks. Ruth, we will see, falls through the cracks. What if a widow, which Ruth was one like this, whose husband dies and the husband has no brothers to marry? Well, the law of Moses provided that the brothers should marry. Well, if there's no brothers, then she is stuck as being a widow. Well, it appears that Israelis took the law, took the spirit of the law, and expanded that law. And the expansion of that law became a tradition called Kinsman Redeemer, or also called the Avenger of Blood. If a wife, if her husband dies and she had no brother-in-laws, the next closest relative would be her husband. Now, one thing I forgot to say when it came to the levirate marriage, if a brother-in-law says no to the widow, "I'm not going to marry you," she does two things. She takes his sandal, throws it away, and she spits in his face. Forever, that man and his family to come is known as a man in a family without a sandal. Well, in the Kinsman Redeemer, if there's no brother-in-law, goes to the next closest relative, and he becomes the husband in order to carry on the family line. But he becomes more than just the husband. He becomes the property owner. He is like a power of attorney today, or an executor of an estate, but even that is a poor comparison. He can purchase back property that had been lost by the death of the first husband, or even anything he did prior to his death that would cause the property to be lost. another aspect of the kinsman redeemer. This is where we get the term avenger of blood. If the original husband was murdered, it was his responsibility to go out and find the murderer and have him executed. So a kinsman redeemer, his responsibilities appear, from what we understand, to be much larger in scope than the brother-in-law and the levirate marriage. He is called the redeemer because he redeems the wife, the widow. He redeems her back to the place of being married. He redeems her property, her land. He redeems the family lineage so it can carry on. And basically, the whole idea of kinsman redeemer is not just to carry on the immediate family lineage, but the whole clan, the extended family of that widow and her deceased husband. And in the long run, to carry on the whole tribe of Israel, which we know there were 12. Another law that is important to the Book of Ruth is called the Law of Gleaning. And it's found in Leviticus 19:10 and Deuteronomy 24:21. In this situation, a poor person, which Ruth and Naomi were, as we will see, could go and glean in the fields when harvesters are harvesting a crop. The law of Moses said, when you harvest a crop, don't harvest around the edge, don't harvest in the corners. When you pile the harvest, the crop, the barley or wheat or whatever, and you tie them in the piles, if one piece of barley, wheat or whatever falls to the ground, you cannot pick it up. It's got to be left for the poor person. Poor was entitled to reap that which the harvesters were told not to harvest. This provided for the poor. This is interesting in light of our modern day socialistic world, because for the most part, poor are just given financial help. They're just given food at food banks. In this law, found in the Law of Moses, the poor just wasn't given the food. They had to work to get the food, just as the harvesters worked. They had to go out and get it themselves. That's something to be learned here for modern day socialism. So in the Book of Ruth, we have the main characters. We have Naomi, Elimelech, her husband. Her husband dies. They have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They die. Those two sons marry two Moabite women, one named Orpah, one named Ruth. Orpah disappears from the storyline. Ruth remains with Naomi. The next person in the storyline is Boaz. He ends up marrying Ruth. Now, many people, theologians and preachers, have really made the Book of Ruth to be a love story. But I will show you, as we go through the Book of Ruth, this isn't really a love story. The Book of Ruth is not about a love story, but about redemption, about Boaz's responsibility to a widow. Love is secondary. As a matter of fact, there might not even be love in this story. And if you say it's the primary storyline, well, you're doing a lot of speculating. So let's look at the Book of Ruth. It is the book of redemption. And when we're all finished going through verse by verse, we will go through the book again and show the spiritual significance to this little four-chapter book. It's called Types and Shadows. It's a theological term that means an historical event, a person, a place, or a thing has a meaning beyond the natural. It has a spiritual meaning. And This can be a little tricky because some people apply different meanings to the event, the person, the place, or thing, and we have a controversy. But when it comes to the Book of Ruth, conservative evangelical theologians are pretty well in line with each other concerning the type, the shadow, the model that the storyline means when it comes to its spiritual significance. For more information, you can visit my website, stevesweetman.com, and learn more about the Book of Ruth.